Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various offensive litigating strategies. This is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are much important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known purely for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very fairly priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy Is in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups that Your Remedy Is in the Law. And Your Remedy Is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level, a based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of that if it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together. Much of that you think of a social network. Though not that you mean like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal things, their personal things, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I'm similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated to yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best. And believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen. And when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call the board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to our speaker for this evening.
Almost. GW will be here very shortly.
Let me get it to Mr. Edwards, and he will introduce our speaker. Forget that.
There we go. Thank you so much, Martin. I appreciate that. This evening's speaker is GW, and as you all well know, GW focuses on correcting your status. Everyone that I ask, everyone, I have yet to have somebody get that little smile on their face and give me the correct answer. Everyone, when you ask them if they are or how many classes of citizenship there are in the United States, they'll say there's just one. And then I'll ask them, are you a United States citizen? They go, of course. Never realizing that they're confessing that that point, were that a judicial hearing, to being a franchise and property of the United States. Remember, Lincoln fought a war, a civil war, to do what? To preserve what? The Union. There are Union State citizens, and there are United States citizens. Now, Union State citizens, that phrase, used to appear on forms that the Internal Revenue Service offered one. That was W-8 then that I saw. I'm sure it's elsewhere, but no longer. However, in the United States Code, at Title 8, Section 1502, you'll find the reference to an American national. I encourage you, use your search engine, type in United States Code, Title 8, Section 1502, and you will see the reference to an American national. So, why is this important? President Madison, one of our founding fathers, said in Federalist Paper number 39, where he was addressing Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution that had just been written, quote, its jurisdiction extends to certain enumerated objects only and leaves the several states a residuary and inviolable sovereignty over all other objects, end quote. Wow. So it's very clear that Madison was talking about the created giving limited jurisdiction, and its creator having inviolable sovereignty over all other subjects, the states, the Union states. Just 85 years later, right after the Civil War, you know, everybody thinks the Civil War is about freeing the slaves and so forth. No, had nothing to it. That was the poster child. That was the theater. That was the optics. What it was about was flipping the outline to take the Almighty One, which created man, taking man that created the states, creating the several states that created the Union, and inverting it. That's what it was about. Just 85 years later, in U.S. versus Anthony, 24 Fed 829, 1873, quote, the term resident and citizen of the United States is distinguished, meaning different from, a citizen of one of the several states, in that the former is a special class of citizen created by Congress. It's creation. It wasn't created by the Almighty One. It was created by the Congress. Remember, the Creator is always greater than its creation. So there's a special class of creature created by the Congress. It's their property. It has to do what they tell it to do. And that was just after the Civil War. They couldn't get away with it before the Civil War. So if Congress, in its grotesque wisdom, decides that it wants to vaccinate everything, everyone, it can do it. If it wants to cull the herd, it can do that. No different than a cattle rancher can vaccinate his cattle. A cattle rancher can cull its herd. A horse rancher can vaccinate against equine encephalitis, whatever. It owns United States citizens. Scott SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the United States. Justice John Marshall Harlan. The year was 1901. He actually predicted what was going to happen today. In part, he said, the idea prevails with some. Indeed, it has found expression in arguments at the bar that we have in this country substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all of its restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument, and here's the kicker, by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to, end quote. Well, it continues to quote, but stopping there. What we're seeing today playing out politically is the end game for all of this. How many millions, maybe billions, of people have been killed or will be dying soon, within a year, 5 years, 10 years at the most, because they have graphene assembling itself within your body that's been vaccinated. And what's going to happen when they crank up the power on a 5G antenna that someone with this graphene in their body, which is going to respond very excitedly, what's going to happen when that graphene in the brain or in the heart is exercised like that, excited like that? All right. So when we talk about American exceptionalism, what we're talking about is one half of this government, these two governments. The government that is maintained under the Constitution with all its restrictions is the government that no other government, no other people in the world enjoy other than us. Now, I've shared this with several people. I mean, everybody. My wife rolls her eyes when somebody asks me a question because she knows I'm going to get her on my soapbox. But the question is people roll their eyes when I tell them that they don't need a driver's license. They don't need a marriage license. They don't need any kind of licensure. They don't need a Social Security number. That's only for that group of people. Remember, some IRS commissioner says that the income tax is voluntary. It's voluntary until you get a Social Security number. You got to undo that, which is something that Bernie offers with regards to strategic withdrawal. But in the meantime, until the finances can come up for that, we have this thing tonight that we're talking about as far as correcting your status, taking you from being a United States citizen into being a Union State citizen, better known appropriately within the United States Code as an American national. So those are the things that I wanted to cover with you tonight, and I'm very pleased to turn this call now over to our speaker this evening, GW.
Hello, everyone. Hope everyone's having a I think it was George Washington's original birthday, wasn't it? And then they changed it to President's Day. I think that was
ripped everything off.
Yeah, I think that was the original. Original was, remember, George Washington's birthday, and then had to be more politically correct, and just call it prisoners.
Hey, so, that's another GW.
Yeah, right. Right.
Happy birthday, GW.
I thought I'd speak a little bit about the temptation when you're going after, you know, getting out there, and I know that you'll like me talking about this, Michael, but when you're getting out there going after information on correcting your status, a lot of people run into a lot of different things. They run into all kinds of different websites, and the same ones keep on popping up all the time, and even the one that is Copper Moonshine Stills pops up. And of course, I read it many, many years ago, and it's been there for a long time. And there's a bunch of good information, but there's a lot of just misleading information on it too. One of the things is they always tell you that never put an affidavit with your, you know, with your application for passport. Like, they'll say, they'll immediately, dismiss it, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, we had, the other day, we had a gentleman that we were on, Michael, myself, and John were on with, and this gentleman happened to make a little bit of a blunder because he actually followed the Copper Moonshine Stills process in trying to procure a passport, and it backfired and he got denied. And the unfortunate thing is that a lot of those actions have consequences. One of those consequences, if you move forward with somebody else's process that where you get denied, is that you cannot reapply for a passport, at least for a minimum of a year. And from what somebody told us, me and Michael, that the State Department is really enforcing these things, really kind of clamping down to give those $10,000 fees, okay, and to hand them out. And so I wanted to make sure I kind of covered that in case you're out there surfing the internet, looking at different processes, and I just wanted people to understand that, you know, when they lead you and you screw up, it's not on them, it's on you now, and the fines can be a little heavy. And so hopefully nobody else on this call is doing that at this time. Another thing.
Well,
go ahead.
It's important for the students to understand there are many places out there that are offering, we'll show you how to correct your status, $250 or some $150, whatever it is. You get what you pay for, and the price that you pay is heavy. I'd like for you, if you would, and I don't want to steer you away from what you intended to talk about this evening, but I wanted to. In fact, we have a new call, first-time caller here. If I may, I'd like to, from Davenport, that's what I'm showing here, I'd ask this first-time caller how you heard about us, if you would, please.
Just a second.
Yeah, I hear you coming across loud and clear. You were.
Yep.
You're breaking up, or are you on a headset or something? Or
no, let me turn the speakerphone on.
No, you're good now. You're good now. So whatever you're doing, stay there. So how'd you hear about us?
Mark Boyle went to a friend of mine when I had I guess you emailed him back, and he forwarded an email, and I emailed you. I said I wanted to listen in, and you said okay.
Oh, terrific. Sure. Welcome. What is your first name, please?
John. I'm a senior citizen, so I've been around a while, learned quite a bit. When it comes time to ask a question, what do I have to do to mute and unmute?
Press star 2 on your keypad. Star 2. When you press star 2, your hand will pop up on a board that I'm looking at, and then our host tonight, Martin, will unmute you and invite you to speak. Okay?
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Anyways, GW, this is a first-time caller. I was watching an email thread that they had developed. I invited them to come on the call tonight. Could you please share some of the horrors? You just shared one about this fellow. Now it's going to have to wait a year because he went through a certain process. What are some other horror stories, and to whose service provider is it accountable to, please?
Oh, okay, well, there's been a lot of action with, and I've gotten a lot of people that have come to me after they have gone through the information from, for instance, Onavon Wright. And another name out there, David Strait. And so those two have garnered a lot of attention and have been doing seminars all over the place. Just give you one example that's very strange when you take the behavior of especially the woman, Onavon Wright. She came in and attended a conference that a friend of ours that does, he's kind of like a constitutional lawyer. He's an older gentleman, and he actually had done the same process that we use here, and that Michael uses with everybody, that I use with everybody. And it took him a long time to get there. He's an attorney, and he's quite stubborn. And finally, after it took his friends about 7 years to get him to the point where he actually looked at it and then found out, oh, my gosh, after studying Supreme Court cases and whatnot, somebody's doing something with their mic that's pretty loud. I don't know who that is in the background there, but you might want to mute out so that – hello?
I'll do that. I did not unmute, John. I forgot to. You're good now.
Okay. All right. So this woman came into one of his conferences that he was giving, and I've told the stories before, so I'll tell it really fast. But he had never met her before, but he's seen her picture many, many times. And when he saw her come into the back of the room, he realized he knew her, but he couldn't put anywhere. And she only stood there for about 5 minutes. And then she went back out of the room. Well, after the break, he went out to the table that was selling all of his books, tapes, and materials. And the person that was manning the table told him that, a lady walked up and she bought everything. she just bought everything that was available. And so he asked her, of course, you know, well, who was it? And then they found out it was Anna von Wright. And so why would somebody do that? Why would somebody buy all the books, tapes, and materials? That's a real sneaky thing to do when you think about it, because I know she doesn't use his process, that's for sure, in doing what she's doing. And on top of that, it's a way to kind of stifle, you know, what's going on with the people that are there to learn and then to, be able to buy books and tapes and materials that are going to be, you know, read and used. Very much, my opinion, doubtful that any of those materials were used for anything other than put into a can somewhere. But going further, I've had numerous conversations with people, seen the documents, they send it to me over and over again. I'm tired of looking at them. And one day, and this was probably about 6 months ago, 8 months ago now, one of her students was stopped in the traffic stop in California. And one of the things that she does with her group is they promote these, it sounds really good, these constitutional caucuses or constitutional assemblies. That's right, it's a constitutional assembly. We're going to be able to educate people, put them together. They're going to learn how to, you know, hold the people's grand juries and things like that. But another thing she does with these constitutional assemblies that she has over a number of states is she actually will issue you a card, a travel card. And this card is issued by her, okay? And it has your picture on it. It has all these things that, you know, talk about as, you know, constitutional travel and all that stuff. It's a real good thought, but the gentleman that handed that to the cop was immediately arrested and then his car was impounded. And, of course, they made an example out of him, okay, which is not really good for the movement. When you take that and you counter that with what we're doing here, okay, we're helping you to understand how to correct your status and standing with the number uno agency in the country, which is in Washington, D.C., which is called the, you know, U.S. State Department, which is the one that's recognized by every cop out there, every judge, all the people in the places that you need to interface with in some kind of a dire situation like that. These are the people that when you hand them a card, I could state this pretty much categorically, better not be an Anna von Wright's card, because when they try to run that, what is that going to link up to? When we go through this process with you and you end up getting your passport and passport card, and let's say you were stopped in a traffic stop, when they run that card, which they can do, by the way, because that interfaces with all of their equipment, okay, they can run it in what's called pass card mode, it states what the State Department says about you. And now you're correct the status, which is a much, much better outcome to have than, handing somebody some card that was made at, you know, however, okay, and that they can't run with any official government institution. that should be pretty black and white right there, just that explanation, you know, because if you're trying to achieve and get remedy and be in a place where you're categorized as when they run that card and it says do not stop or do not detain, do not arrest, do not search, that's a much better place to be than running some card that has been issued by this lady. And so anyway, that's just a couple of those kind of little horror stories. There's many, many, many more. But I also wanted to sort of talk a little bit about some conversations that I was having today with I got a client that is from Moscow. Already took his friend through the whole process, and he's got everything and doing very well. And he referred his friend and compadre over there that he's been working with and working around. They have kind of a group over there, and kind of interesting. And talking to a guy in Moscow that's a he was born in Ukraine, came to America in the 80s, went through the naturalization process, and then got a little fed up with America, so now he's been mostly doing his thing over in Europe and in Moscow and a little bit in Israel. And so he's a naturalized U.S. citizen, which also the other gentleman is under the same auspices, and has corrected his status successfully. So we were talking, and it's kind of funny because people they tend to ask the same questions. You know, you get the same questions over and over. And as soon as they wake up through the conversation after a little while, they ask a question. They say, well, why isn't everybody doing this? Well, I mean, if this is right, I mean, why isn't everybody doing this? It's like, duh. How much did you know about this before your friend just told you a little bit about, you know, correcting your status? Like, I didn't know anything. It's like, yeah, you're a worldwide entrepreneur. You have businesses and trading firms, okay, in multiple countries. You're evidently very highly educated, okay, and you had no clue, okay. And so this is what's interesting is that, and when I say this, I'm not trying to be tongue-in-cheek about it, and I'm not trying to joke around. The Rockefellers in our country, okay, these weren't people with the best of intentions, okay? They funded, all right, the Board of Education back in 1902. It was somewhere right around $4 billion back in 1902. That was a lot of money. And old man Rockefeller said, I don't care about having highly educated academians. I care about having highly trained workers. Okay? And that's exactly what they've gotten. They've gotten out of the school systems. They've gotten highly trained W-2 workers, okay, that are mostly positioned to be a great worker for all the different firms and all the different, you know, places they can work for. And when they say, you know, you got to be taxed and you got to give this and you got to do that, it's like, you know, they salute, okay? That's the reality. But it's not just with education. I mean, they took over the medical system right about that time. That's when the Rockefellers bought the Merck, okay, which was one of the first company, first medical pharmaceutical companies that they bought, was about the year 1900, and things changed after that. They also took over science. They took over the Bar Association. They took over a lot of parts of government. One of the first places that they actually went after, which was not even the Treasury, they went after the State Department way back when, Okay. The very first big administration they really wanted to really get their teeth into. Here is the good news. You know, that was the bad news. Here is the good news. And I love this part right here. Our Father in heaven, which, you know, the leaders, you know, on this call, and then Michael and John, and I don't think there's a service provider out there that doesn't have a rich faith in their Father, who created them and who gave them the canon of Scripture, okay, the Word of God, literally, okay, and the instructions in that Word. And in Hosea, it's written that he says, it's God speaking, and he's saying, my people are perishing or are being destroyed for lack of knowledge. And it's not a lack of going to a Rockefeller school or getting a Rockefeller certificate, diploma, or getting a baptismal certificate or anything like that. It's actually knowledge. It's comprehension of a, you know, subject matter. And that's what we, as researchers and truth seekers are doing. We're finding the different, you know, ways to remedy these things. Now, the other part of that is that, it is the enemy that's allowed to tempt us. Okay. And by the way, it says God doesn't, it cannot be tempted, and neither does he tempt. Okay, now God tests us, but he doesn't tempt us. But there's another verse that talks about how we are, when we are tempted, we're never tempted beyond what we can handle. And here's what's interesting, and I love this, man, because this really always is, it's a kind of a life verse for me. But with the temptation, God provides a way of escape. And so here's what's interesting. Even though it's the enemy tempting us with, okay, sign up for this privilege, benefit, you know, social security number, whatever it is, okay, and we get these temptations from the enemy to acquiesce into their system, God, it says, provides the way of escape. So they have to build it into their plan. They don't even have an option, the enemy. They have to. Because it's one of those immutable laws that can't be messed with. So they're always forecasting, just like, you know, what happened in Ohio with this big spill, okay, that they burned it off and it was, you know, hydrochloric acid went into the clouds and is now killing off all these things over in the Palestine, Ohio. They telegraphed that a year beforehand with a movie, okay? I forget what the movie's called, but it was actually they used people from the Palestine area as extras in that movie, and it was all about a train wreck and all about chemicals and poisoning. And they telegraph everything, which is very interesting. But not only do they telegraph, they have to put the escape clauses right within their code. And so we find those things. Now, the unfortunate part, and this is what most people are asking constantly, is, well, why isn't everybody doing this? Why didn't my lawyer tell me about this? The lawyers, your attorneys, I mean, good people, okay? A lot of good people are attorneys. A lot of them have great hearts, want to see justice. They're completely taught in a captured operation, which is called a Rockefeller Law School. Funded by the Rockefellers, created by the Rockefellers, so they never learn about these things that we're talking about. They don't talk about the things that Bernie talks about on Saturday night. They don't talk about the things that Herr Slavin talks about on Wednesday night, okay? And they don't talk about the things that I talk about here on Monday, and neither do they talk about the things that John educates people on Tuesday night, because they want to keep you on the farm. They want to keep you, and they need their slave masters, the ones that they have out there on the plantation, is the you know, ones that are the go-tos, the ones that wear the white robes and wear the suits, the attorneys and whatnot, their programs in such a way that they're never given this information. They never study this material. They only do it, they only get it by osmosis or going out and studying it themselves. And then on top of that, the system is so complete, even with doctors, as you probably have all noticed this over the past 2 to 3 years now, even when they find the remedy as an attorney or as a doctor, if they employ that with their clientele, I mean, they could be in big, big trouble. Not only big trouble, they can, you know, they can be eliminated. And so they're in a bad spot trying to do this, whereas we aren't. You know, we can do these things, and there's little, if any, repercussion for us in correcting our status, you know, using, you know, alternative type of remedies for our health, and so on and so forth. So with that said, I think what we probably should do, Michael, is open up the phone lines for questions and answers.
Well, before we turn this over to Martin, I have one thing to add to your comments, and then I have a question come in by way of to me, easiest way, and I'm going to ask that question as well. But what I want to add, and this is so critically important, especially if you're new to us for the work that we do here, is that my focus has been in developing a team, not just promoting one fellow, one lady, but promoting a team to provide a holistic, for robbing a term from Health Matters, a holistic approach, a global approach to whatever the issue is that you're dealing with. So in this case here, GWs, we're talking about correcting your status. On the Saturday call with Justice Beshear, we're talking about using trusts to insulate and isolate a trust, a religious trust. That is a non-taxable, non-record-keeping trust by the IRS's definition. Okay, and these things have been going on with the work that Justice Beshear's done for nearly 30 years without any controversy. To operate your personal life through a religious corporation. Again, something that's been done for many people, thousands of people over the near 30 years. Conflict at all whatsoever. So there's that, and then there's the Tuesday night call with John. John is one of a few people that we have who went to law school, graduated law school, took the bar exam, passed the bar exam, and then when invited to become a member of that state bar, said thank you, but no thank you. And they took that education as a starting point in their long career to learn all that they can about the Constitution and how it applies. So these people are no stranger to the concept of two national governments operating at the same time, if you're at the beginning of this call. And they are basically 100% successful, if they're brought in early enough, in order to maneuver and place into the courts through the teachings that they share with their students, briefs and so forth and motions, that they walk away unscathed. Yes, it's a nerve-wracking thing, but, you know, for instance, maybe two months ago, you remember that 63-year-old gentleman, aches and pains in his body. He believes that CBD oil gives him peace. His body takes out the inflammation. So he takes these gummy bears with CBD and THC compounds in them. They're over the counter in California, and that's where he was traveling through at the time, and he picked up a case didn't think anything about it, was coming back home, traveling through, I think it was Arizona, possibly, and was pulled over for a taillight. And when the officers saw the gun, they charged him with drug trafficking. Drug trafficking. Because that's what met, they believe, the criteria in Arizona for drug trafficking. The old guy trying to get rid of his aches and pains, chewing on a gummy bear. Anyways, the long and the short of it is that after maybe 3 months of educating the student, and the student going through the litigation, all charges were dropped. And even more importantly, the $5,000 bond was returned. They don't give bond money back. Nobody does. And yet there they did. So we know that it's very powerful. We have had three students here who have corrected their status. They've misbehaved knowingly, willingly, and intentionally. And all three times their cases have been dropped. Just dropped. Dismissed. Go away. And that's because they've corrected their status. So I want you to understand that tonight's promotion, if you would, it's about GW. It's about correcting your status, definitely. But it's also for you to understand that there's an entire team there that is at your disposal to right wrongs. And now the question that came in to me by way of text. Can you have GW delve into the pros and cons of David Lester Strait? Okay.
Well, I don't know the man.
Covered this before. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know the man personally. I've never spoken to him, probably wouldn't want to at this point. It wouldn't even be something that I would be even remotely interested in. There are YouTube channels that are actually, I know of, I think two, one that I've listened to a lot of information on. There's actually YouTube channels dedicated to people that have gone through his process, know him, and are exposing him and trying to help people out. And, I mean, there's a ton of content on there. I mean, I don't have the time to really go through a lot of that stuff because I like to stay busy with people that have real problems that I can help resolve.
Real positive things.
Yeah. What I can tell you is that I have people asking me on a regular basis, you know, is this guy a plant? You know, because they get so confused by he's got what seems like a lot of good information. But what I find in how he goes about things, okay, and how he does his, he does mostly seminars and at a lot of churches, mostly in Utah, because he's LDS. He conflates a lot of different issues that really wow the audience. Okay, if you've never studied about the straw man before, okay, and by the way, there's a lot to it, and it's true. The straw man, you know, your all caps name compared to your lowercase, you know, upper and lowercase name, which recognizes the real man, okay? If you've never delved into and understand the Sysdicate Trust and the birth certificate, the bonds that are created, you know, from the birth certificates and traded on Wall Street, you know, through Fidelity and all this kind of stuff, it really is captivating. But the thing is that he throws out a lot of this different information, which is actually relevant, okay? But when I get somebody that's talking about those issues and they bring up and they've come to me to understand the correction process, it's like, listen, I'll be happy to talk with you at more length about some of those other things after you get a real foundation, okay, for correcting your status and going through and understanding that, because there's a lot really to understand in reality. There's not a lot to actually help you to get through it, but there's a lot more to understand just on that topic alone. But they throw all these other topics in there, and you have these people that are just wowed by all this information, and they want to go to all the different seminars, and they want to order all the different, you know, they have a whole host of things that you can order. And I've been on the website where they actually promote doing the 1099 OID process, okay? And I can speak to that quite on a crazy level if you really wanted to know a lot about the 1099 OID process. But I'll tell you one thing. It's super dangerous for the average person to even try it, let alone completed it and gotten huge amounts of money back from the Treasury. It's kind of getting close to the third rail. And if everybody's familiar, a lot of us old folks, people from New York, Chicago, in the area, you know about the third rail. When it comes to trains, man, you never want to step on that rail. You're toast fast. It's what powers it up. What I'm saying is the 1099 OID process is dangerous. I wouldn't tell anybody to do it or to even try it. That's what the Justice Department came after me for, by the way, and also the Treasury. But what are they plants? Could this be a government, operation to keep people going through their system? I don't know. It could be. I'm not saying it is, but my opinion, it possibly could be. But there's just a whole lot of misinformation there with the good information. And then we can cover this on this call also, just to kind of cover it. There's also when you're doing and you're investigating and you're going on Google, you're doing whatever, and finding out a lot about either correcting your status, you'll run into videos that are from Russell J. Gould and also Plenipotentiary Judge David Wood Miller that are out there and that are very interesting and seem like maybe it's a remedy. And I'm not saying it's not, and this is about, correct parts, say, syntax, grammar. I studied it for quite a while, decades ago, and I had a relationship with David Wynn Miller, and he's the one that handed me over to Russell J. Gould, who's still alive and still doing a lot. The problem, here's the problem, Russell's incredibly adept mathematically, and he flows at a very, very high intellectual level and can speak and write in correct parse syntax grammar like nobody else. And that's how he teaches people to do their court cases and to do their claim of the life and, a number of different things. If you ask Russell, and I have close friends that live very close to him, by the way, and have dinner with him still regularly. And when you ask him about the IRS, he just says, that's something you don't want to mess with. And, you just want to, he comes up shy on that. Now, if you speak to myself, you speak to Michael, you know, or you speak to Brother John, who has a lot of wins in that area, by the way, helping people to deal with extreme situations, which is really his bailiwick. You know, I mean, it's about really helping people when they're in dire straits. It's a totally different, it's a totally different game. And the reason I say that is because to prevail with correct parse syntax grammar in a court case, you better be like Russell in your ability to deliver, okay, and stand your ground and understand what you're doing, which I think is, just my personal opinion, it's extremely difficult. And that's why I love the simpler route. And it's not that it's simple, but it's a lot easier for a judge, a prosecutor, a DA, to understand just plain English than it is to read correct parse syntax grammar, which is a mathematical equation frontwards and backwards. Okay, so that, I'll just stop with that because I know I get into the woods with it. But yeah, there are a lot of different things out there you can investigate and you can try to do. It's, you know, you just want to be kind of careful.
Right. The other thing that I'd like to say is that at 16 years of age, I went to work for Zales Jewelers. At 24, I opened up my own store and was very successful being a manufacturing wholesale retail. I would have people come in, never seen before, reaching out with my advertising, never saw them before. And they would say, do you know what Ronnie said about you? That was a competitor. And I said, no, but you really don't need to share with me. And then I'd smile. How may I help you today? And they'd say, well, then they'd come back and say, well, how can you be like that? And I said, because Ronnie gives me some of my best customers that I've never seen before like you.
Point being is that
we don't like to talk about other people in a negative sense, from a position of an evil tongue, if you would. But it is important to forewarn someone before they step into a snake pit, right? So that's I want you to understand this is where these comments are coming from. And again, understand that we take a team approach to whatever it is issue that you're dealing with. So, Martin, let me turn the call over to you now to take care of your hosting work, and we'll go from there.
All right, very good. Star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, star 2 to raise your hand. I'll unmute you one at a time. If you're on the Freedoms Radio side, type your question in the question bar there, and do not forget, please, to click submit. First up, we've got Kent in West Virginia. Go ahead, Kent.
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening.
Good evening, Kent.
Okay. So, Greg, I want to ask you a question, if I might. Mike was just talking about the history of different people who are, you know, working on different situations, trying to change some of the dire situations that we're in today. And the other day on a call, he was talking about the history of the various information providers, and a conversation ensued regarding the amount of experience they have and how long they've been doing something. And could you clarify for us, because I've noticed over the course of time, you know, you've given us a date of 2014, but then said back in the early 2000s you were working on this. Could you just kind of clarify the process, or, you know, the two or three delineations that you went through and when you actually started this? And then, you know, when you felt that you had it finalized, whether that be from the 1990s to 2014 or whatever?
Sure. So,
thank you.
I kind of woke up back in really to what was going on with the whole thing that I talk about, the Rockefeller schools and everything back in 1979, was I believe that was really the year, and exited that system. I didn't really start to I started gaining ground in the early 1980s, and then in 1984 I started my contracting business and declared myself an Article 1 Section 10 contractor, and so that brought on a little bit of heat, but I won every time I was approached, or they tried to, you know, wrangle me in, so to speak, and try to get, you know, you need a license, blah, blah, blah. I was like, what? Do you understand Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution? So, and it was, I met Brother John in 1996, okay? Probably met Bernie right around the same time, because he was at the same, in the same room that we were in. And I was talking back then about some things that were similar, but I didn't have the full scope of under really understanding how to correct your status until approximately 2008. Okay, in 2008, in March of 2008 is when I actually corrected my status and went through the process with both the State Department and also the Treasury, okay, and so that was, you know, that my anniversary is coming up here. I think it's March 8th of so it'll be 15 years here next month around the 8th. So and to be totally transparent, Kent. To be totally transparent, I didn't really start to really teach and help a lot of people do, you know, in doing this until this puppet regime referred to as the Biden administration came into power. So that really launched a lot of people getting hold of me and saying, hey, you know, that stuff you're talking about, you've talked to me about before, you know, is there anything to it? How do we do it? That kind of a thing. And then, you know, I don't know how long it was after that, but, you know, met Michael and there's others, you know, that I interface with, and you know, it's pretty popular, I would say, but I would say it's popular within the circles still that we travel in or that you're kind of interfacing with, but it's not mainstream by any stretch of the imagination, this topic. It's not mainstream at all. It's, you know, people every day are, you know, they have no idea what you're talking about if you say correct your status. You know, No, I'm about done. Yeah.
Okay. Could you elaborate on the importance of 2014, which you raised several times, and also tell us when you were hit with those numerous problems with the Treasury Department and the DOJ, et cetera, and how that fell into this and where your level of understanding was?
Okay. So 2014, what about 2014? I don't.
Well, I've heard you mention 2014 in the past as a time when you got up and rolling on doing certain things, but I don't quite see how that fits into this picture.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember saying that, but I will tell you this. It was when I was released from jail, okay, after they held me for 5.5 months and they finally released me in December of 2007. When I got out, and I was put on pretrial services at that time, and having to wait to be go through all the particular round of charges. Okay, there was five charges, and as soon as I got out, I went full bore into understanding in the fine points of correcting your status, and then I finally got it done in March. Okay. So it took me about, 4 months or so to really, getting into it pretty heavy and realizing what I needed to do and executing it. And then shortly after that, I would say probably the next year. Maybe at the end of the year, it might have been, I think it was more like the spring of the next year in 2009, is when they had the little, what do you call it? It was when I was deposed by my partner's counsel at the Arizona AG's office, where they and then they sprung that one crucial question on me that had nothing to do with the charges. They asked me if I had ever filed a 1040 or paid taxes, federal income taxes. And that's when they gasped, most of the people in the room, at my response, which was, no, never have, and of course, if you don't file, you're not paying any money. And so that's when and then within a week or two after that is when I got called into the IRS to be audited. That was, the first time. And so that was, that was like 2009, and then it was a little later in 2009 that the CID actually came after me. It was a little later. Let's see. CID. No. CID was CID was in 2011. And then the Justice Department was shortly after that. Most likely in the same year, 2011. Yeah.
So it's safe to say that you've been doing this for 15 years, but even after doing the process, as you said, you got busy and did it after being held in the 5.5 months in jail. Even after doing that, you still ran into complications with the CID, the DOJ, et cetera.
Yeah. From previous stuff that I had, stuff that I was working on. Actually, I was doing the reason for the IRS audit was because they got me to admit on record that I never filed a 1040.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a total setup. I don't know if you can figure that one out. That was a total setup.
Mm-hmm.
they were hoping. I know that my ex-partner and his attorney thought they had it in the bag. I mean, I'm sure they thought, wow, if we just get him to say this, we're taking him out.
Don't ask a question you don't know the answer to.
Yeah, well, I knew the answer to it, which was easy. Yeah. And so now here's the unfortunate part. What they meant for evil – well, this is fortunate. What they meant for evil, God meant for good, okay? Because I would have never volunteered that information to anybody on a record if I wasn't in that situation. But because I went through it and how I prevailed with it, it gave me not just the kahunas to be pretty bold with it, but it also showed me that – this process works, okay, and then on top of that, in 2020, I saw the IRS on I was Googling around for my ex partner's name, and I found that he had put in a petition to the IRS through the court, and the DOJ came back and denied his request, and he's presently being arrogated and irrigated. Okay, it ain't a pretty picture for him right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I mean I'm not feeling good about that. I'm not like, oh, that's great, you know, you son of a gun. I feel really bad for him. But what it shows me is that, okay, for instance, okay, we'll get on to this subject. If you read the court case and the pleadings of it, I mean, they were cleaning his clock for all the stupidity that he did when we had the corporation sold, and my ex-partner did what we teach people never to do, okay? And Bernie talks about this on calls, and Michael knows this, and so does Brother John. And okay, the one thing is when you have the charitable religious trust or the corporation soul, that entity is its own entity, okay? And you are, if you're an officer of that corporation soul, which I was the overseer, and actually Ed was the scribe at the time. And so he had access to the account in which he would write himself checks on a regular basis. I mean, he wouldn't go and spend and write out a check to a merchant. He would go and put a check into his bank account, his personal bank account. Could never get him to stop doing it. Okay? And after a while, it's kind of like, okay, whatever. You know, you do what you're going to do. Well, so many years later, okay, it's still killing him. It's the stupidest thing you can do is to take a check out of the corporation soul or charitable business trust account and put it into your own name. Now, he did this so many times, okay, that there was enormous, enormous amount of tax, okay, bill. And, I mean, there's so many other things I could talk about on this that he did that was so stupid, okay? And here's the thing. I never did it even one time, ever. Never needed to. I never needed to. Okay, I never needed to put anything into an account in my name. Of course, you got to realize something. I haven't had an account in my own name for decades. I mean, we're going back a long, long ways. Okay. So anyway, it's a learning lesson. Hopefully your question is a learning lesson for other people that are, if they're similarly situated or they're thinking about, you know, putting together their financial structure, that, you know, never take a check out of the, you know, 508 account and put it into something that's in your name. Mm-hmm. Not only is it, it will get you in trouble, you never need to. Okay.
Okay. So, well, I obviously ask these questions so we can all learn something, so that everybody that's listening can learn something. But if you would just explore one more thing, and then I'm finished with my questions. When you say that you had problems with that, it was really a setup, and you know that you had problems with the CID and the DOJ, et cetera, after you had already done this in 2008, did that event at all, or those events cause you to rethink the process you had done in 2008 and to enhance it or to make it simpler than you had originally done in 2008? What was your line of thinking or conclusions after you still had issues arise after having done this correction?
Yeah, for the most part, Kent, it's gotten a little bit simpler. It's not drastically, but it's gotten a little bit simpler. Okay, it's with the affidavit. The affidavit's gotten a little bit simpler. The W-8-B-E-N is basically almost the same. It's changed just a little bit. It has the notional principle. There's no need to check the box called notional principle contracts anymore because they're actually stated on the W-8-B-E-N form. The different sightings. Okay, so you don't. There's a couple things that have changed. It's not a big deal. I would say what it has done and what it has shown me that's the most credible and the most significant thing is that everybody around me that was involved in that process, you know, the OID process, they went to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And they walked away from me without even pulling me into court in mm-hmm. both times, with the CID and the DOJ. That shows you the power, okay, of a corrected status. But also, here's another thing you want to remember, and this is the reason why it's my journey or my intent to try to help people ahead of time get your affairs in order ahead of being challenged, because
mm-hmm.
we have people that are being challenged, okay, that John's working with, and they're correcting their status in mid-flight, okay. With some of them, it's an easy thing, and with others, it's a real battle, okay. But when you have your status corrected beforehand, and before it gets to the point of the plea, and in court and some of those things, when they know they have, when the DA is able to see that this person has a corrected status, he can drop it before it ever becomes a docketed court case. And that's a much better avenue to be going down.
Mm-hmm.
You probably agree.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you for your detailed answer and not skirting my questions and answering me directly and being forthright and honest about it. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Very good. Next, John in Iowa. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Just a couple of things. Michael, you got my number. If you can give me a call back and give me the website and the information and everything so I can check it out. The question I have is filling out the passport application, a federal. I know the people that have done this, and the answer no to being a U.S. citizen. And my problem is both my parents were in the military. Mother was a Navy nurse. My father, a Navy pilot, actually flew closer to the Yamato battleship than any pilot, sunk the destroyer shadowing it. But I have a problem about putting no about my parents. Could you explain that, please?
If you're asking, you know, I know you directed it kind of to Michael to give you a call up, and hopefully Michael will get on that tomorrow or whenever to get you some of that information. That information we would love to go over with you, but probably on a private call would be best there, John, to go over some of that stuff about filling out the DS-11 form.
I'm pretty well up to speed in what you're saying. I'm over 70, so The solution to what you said about the prophet Hosea, that's found in the Corinthians, the book of Corinthians. That's a solution to it.
Okay.
Oh, another thing I would ask if everybody would pray that the Supreme Court justices take that Brunson case. And even if they don't, I listened to a video of Weil talking, and the Supreme Court justices, even if they rule against sharing it tomorrow, they still could work on this thing behind the scenes. But say your prayers, folks. There's power in prayer. That's the most important case that has gone before the Supreme Court. That's a clincher. And I honestly believe we all need to accept the oath of office of all public officials. I do it. It's on the public record. It's been run in the newspapers. I accept their oath of office, and I validate it as an equity contract between them and myself from the first day they took office. They raise their right hand, and they swear before God, and they make an offer to us. These courts are commercial. It's equity. And I personally believe we need to accept that oath of office. What do you think?
I like what you're saying. Yeah, there's a lot more to that conversation, but that's good stuff. Good stuff, John.
Well, I'll let somebody else have. Thanks, Michael, for giving me the number, allowing me to be on the call. And I should be free after 9 o'clock tomorrow anytime. I appreciate a call, and then I get a few of the questions I have. And thank you again,
John. We're not ready to let go of you. I want to answer your question because I looked at that as well. My father was a naval aviator in World War II. Prior to World War II, I should say. And my grandfather was a radio man in the Merchant Marine in World War I. And frankly, I've traced my genealogy back in the public record where my great-grandfather, eight times removed, Nathaniel, is listed in the Massachusetts militia having fought against King George III, both at the time of our War for Independence and later again at the War of 1812. And when I saw that form that said that my parents were not United States citizens, this is what I am comfortable with. If you look at the definition in Black's Law of United States, so using that as an adjective to be United States land, or
yeah,
United States
it's
people.
It's a federal corporation. I understand it's a federal corporate, they incorporated.
John.
Yes.
Finish, please. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Black's Law. And Black's Law Dictionary in the 4th, 5th, and 6th edition have three definitions for the word United States, the phrase. Definition is the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to other sovereigns in the nations of the world. Now, because I can trace my genealogy back to Boots Town, having fought against the Redcoats, by birthright, I inherit the decree of King George III, who referred to these former enemy combatants, his former property, as colonists. King George III referred to them as his peer, which is where we get the Castle Doctrine, which is where we get that it's the American people who are the sovereign. It's not the states. It's not the government. Not the federal government. It's the American people. That's the first definition. The second definition of the United States says that which the United States is sovereign over. That's all it says. Very short. And then the third definition is the several states by and under the Constitution. Three definitions, totally adverse from one another, as far away from each as you can be. So when someone asks on a form, are you a United States citizen, and does not give you the opportunity to stipulate which one of these three definitions you are acknowledging, the only answer that you can give is no. Until they specify, otherwise you give them the right to name whatever you wish to name of those three definitions, and then apply it to you with the full force and of the might of the United States.
Thank you,
so
Jesus.
I have no problem answering no, simply because it is incomplete without choice of stipulation. Now, furthermore, you have union state citizen. That's a phrase in government forms a while back, and I've seen one form with it on there. It's a W-8 Ben form, an older form. And it says, of your options of not being a United States citizen, what are you? And it's got, you know, five or six different options. The very last option is Union State Citizen. And then if you go to Title 8 of the United States Code, Section 1502, it'll talk about someone else that's not a United States citizen as an American national. So it's all there. Your remedy is in the law. Just need
okay,
to apply.
Well, I appreciate it. I've got black, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and eighth, I think.
There you go. Excellent. So look up the term United States in the fourth.
Yep, I wrote that down. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, John.
Go ahead, Martin.
All right. Yep. And next up we've got, let's see here. I'm sorry. Anne-Marie in North Carolina.
Good evening, everyone. GW, I have a few questions. I had gotten stopped in Darien, Georgia, and when the police officer asked for my license, I said, I can't locate it. I don't know where it is. I gave him the passport card. And I said, here, you can, you know, this is my information. You can look me up on your equipment. He comes back and he says, no, I can't. I can't look you up on this. He was a younger police officer. He said, no, I can't look you up on this. My system doesn't do that. And at that point, I was going to argue with him. You know, I didn't know what to do at that point. So he did give me the citation for speeding and not having a driver's license. So I'm still in this process. I had sent them registered mail about nationality and everything. And so I called the clerk of court last week and asked if they received my registered mail because I haven't gotten the green card back yet. And she says, oh, yes, we sent that over. We have nothing to do with that anymore. We sent that over to the Solicitor General. I was like, the DA? Yes, the Solicitor General. That's what they call the person in Georgia. So is that – I haven't heard anything yet. Is that a normal
before
process?
Before GW jumps in, I'd like to interject something here. I would have said to the officer, if I were a female, I'd have bat my eyes and smile pretty and said, well, you see – I'm a special puppy. There's a few of us out here that are special puppies. And I have a unique political status that the State Department of the United States recognizes, and they want you to process this. If you're not able to process this, I would encourage you just to wish me a good day and say you're free to leave. You do not want to go any further than that. Because if you were to run this magnetic strip, you'd see that I am a special puppy, and you would have explicit instructions not to detain, not to investigate, to release immediately. Lifetime concealed carry permit is what you'd see. But you do what you want to do, officer. It's called deprivation of rights under color of law. You do what you want to do. I'm here to comply, not to give you a hard time. That's what I would have said, something like that. Non-threatening.
Yeah,
go ahead, GW.
That's a good one too. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I'm sorry that you know had to happen that way for you. Every once in a while, you get a young cop that usually will only do that about once. The other part of that is, you know, you can't always predict who you're going to get and what they're going to do. But hopefully what you send in will prevail. And if they go further, I'm sure there's other things between what Michael and John and I can, you know, discuss that can probably facilitate a deprivation under color of rights situation.
Right. Okay. They want me to appear March 8th, so there's a little time left for them to respond.
So you're on that day, you show up in court, and when you call your name, you say, quote, "I am here on that matter." And when you finally step up there, you say, I want you to take judicial notice that my appearance today is special. It is not a general appearance. I'm here to challenge jurisdiction." And I would carry with me the same paperwork that I'd already had sent to them, including my affidavit. And I'd have several copies so that I could give a copy to the prosecutor as well as the judge by way of the bailiff. And let them go from there. Well, we're only here to find out if you are pleading guilty, not guilty, or nolo contendere. And you say, "Don't, Your Honor, you're putting the cart before the horse. Jurisdiction is challenged. And if you read, once we were calling a subject to a king, I've given you all of the challenges, the things that you should be entering into the court record, advising the judge that he can't rule on you without having a separate special hearing, bringing witnesses forward that will testify you are, in fact, a United States citizen subject to the Congress." I can't do that. So that's where I would go with it, GW.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds good.
I was really hoping avoiding going into court, but I don't.
You're missing out on the animated contest of freedom. You don't want to do that. Why are you laughing?
Because I used to get really nervous when I go in court, but I'm not as – I think I lost that, I hope.
Why would you be nervous? You're the one in charge. They work for you, and they're part-time help. You don't ever throw your weight around, but you're the one that's in charge.
And I have to say, I was not blessed to have the teachers and like GW and John and Bernie and you, Michael, in my life, and the learning that I've had. I was not prepared to go into court to answer the correct way and be in my standing. And honestly, when I did the Chapter 11, I did go in. I never forgot what John said. I used to just go sit in court and watch. And so I could have stayed home and done video conference. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go in there, and I'm going to listen, and I'm just going to watch. And one of the cases that went before me, the attorney says, "Well, Your Honor, we would like to have a little more time because their financial circumstances have changed, and we believe that they can make the payment now." And she said, "Okay, I'll give you 14 days. So I went up there. I had nothing else. I mean, it was the end of it, as far as I could push it. And I said, "Your Honor, the property is in a trust, and I believe that the trust will make the payments, but I have to have a discussion with them. I have to present it to them." "Well, do you know that you need $13,000 a month?" I said, "Well, I can't make that decision. It's up to the trust." She goes, "Okay, I'll give you 14 days. The bank was so mad. They were so mad. And I just was so grateful to John to say, you know, just go sit there and listen. I learned something. Definitely. Mm. Definitely learned
Great.
Something. Yep. So they can scan it then. There is no question
yeah.
about it. Okay.
Yeah, they can. You know, another situation that happened not too long ago with one of my other clients. He was stopped in Torrance, California, and they asked him for his driver's license, and he said, "I don't drive. I travel," which is. See, this is, I don't know if you brought these things up when you were stopped, but, you know, one of the things is not to acquiesce to saying, oh, I lost it, I don't have one. It's just say, listen, that's not even part of the conversation here because I don't drive, okay? Driving mm-hmm. is a license-regulated activity. And I don't drive. I travel, which is my God-given right, and is backed up by the Constitution. And by the way, which, you know, I have all those rights. And here's the document right here. And if you run that, that will verify that. Well, anyway, that's what he did with the cop. The cop was getting a little belligerent, and he gave him his passport card. And the cop's like, hey, you need a driver's license. You're going to be operating a motor vehicle. And he starts, you know, just kind of laying into him. And then finally he looks at Owen and he just shoves the card back into his chest and he says, get out of here. You know, so he didn't even run it. He wouldn't even run it. And maybe he's, you know, done that before. So. But this younger cop that you're talking about, maybe, you know, he might be fresh off of, you know, being trained. So a lot of times they just learn it by osmosis.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Now we've got Michael in Nevada. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes. Good evening. Two things. First, with the last caller there, she sent a notice in, and then she called to ask about it, but she didn't have it notarized. She didn't give them 20 days to respond or be in dishonor, didn't publish it in a paper or two, and send all that and recorded it to courthouse and put the paperwork, keep sending the paperwork to them, and they'll back up. Because they have not a leg to stand on. They're a commercial trading company. But anyway, on a better note, the W-8 Ben, I've been using that, and other than the first time, which I had to deal with the CPA, since then it has been no questions asked, and I don't fill out
oh, really?
Very little. I don't even put the notional contract on there. And I've had no problem at all with
you.
It. They don't take any federal
Michael?
Tax. Say what?
You didn't share that with me. All I heard was about the first one.
Yeah, well, I've been traveling
Michael, you're
to
in
Michigan
trouble, buddy.
And Texas, and I've been on the road. So, but all the rest of them have been compliant. They don't question it at all. And
good.
Right.
It's been I'm going to go back in September to California for Biggie again, and then I'm going to butt heads with that CPA. But I'll do it in a polite way. I won't do it the iron worker way. And there was something else I put on there, but I forget what it is now. Anyway, it's been a good response to it.
Good.
The Union State Citizen, they don't question any of it. Oh, and the other thing is on the contract when you hire in as a wage earner or employee, as they like to call you.
Yeah, right.
It has a listing of are you a U.S., are you a, of what kind of citizenship are you claiming? And I always put I'm an American national slash a Union State citizen. And then I take a photo of it because I know one day they're going to come back at it. And I've got it on there that I've proclaimed that I am an American national. I'm not one of you. And my heritage goes back to before the Revolutionary War. And I can prove that. And I'm superior to them. They have no jurisdiction. They have to prove the jurisdiction. They can't do it. But if you do it in a good way, and whenever you, if you write it out and send it to them, and that was the thing with Peter Graves, Frederick Graves, the attorney, that I got a program from him to give my daughter to learn something about law, that he said, you don't want to go into court. You just want to keep writing to them. You want to keep it in a letter form and keep it very short and to the point. And the shorter it is and to the point of the law, they'll cave. And this guy obviously knows what he's talking about. He's a PhD and a JD and all them other things they post hole diggers they put behind their names. But anyway, that's my little take for tonight. The W-8BN is a good thing, and I put that OMB number on those forms with the American National where it says, what are you? I put on there the OMB and the number on it. They can't dispute it. It's their form. I didn't make the form up. So I'll let you know how the next one goes here tomorrow because I'm going to an air base to do a little job. And I know they're sticklers on paperwork whenever you work in a base. So I'll let you know Wednesday what happens.
It's for you that you – that you have been so successful with it.
Well, I went to Michigan. I gave it to two different companies up there. No question at all. No federal income tax withheld. And my next quest is to go after Social Security because that other 35 years, they give you the 10 highest years. Well, what'd they do with the 35 years that you paid in? So you paid in for 45 years. What did they do with the other 35 years? Where's that investment trust or whatever they want to call it, insurance? I want to see their insurance papers that they're supposed to have. If you're an insurance salesman, you have to be licensed. Where's their license? Social Security claims to be an insurance salesman. Where's their license? But anyway, I'll let you know Wednesday what happens here tomorrow when I give them the paperwork.
Good deal.
Super.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Yes, sir.
And on.
All right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, or you can type it in on the Freedoms Radio site, type it in and click submit.
All right. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Edward here. This was a recording that you were listening to from 1 year ago today. We have four people with their raised hands, so we'll start with Brent, go to Bruce, go to Jennifer, and then to Charlie. So how you doing tonight, Brent?
Oh, man. You guys sounded so good. I thought you were all over live.
No, I thought I'd give a break with everybody because we did, three and a half months. The past 3.5 months we've been reading out of The Greatest Story Never Told. And I thought we'd go back to, I had my programmers pull the recordings. So we're going to start doing the recordings with GW. So this was the first one, and next week it'll be the next one and so forth.
Yeah, I tuned in a little late, but, yeah, it was a good one. And I wanted to comment on some of that W-8BEN stuff. I know somebody close to me who's been using that quite a bit and hasn't had a whole lot of success, maybe here and there. But mostly gets turned down. I'm still fighting with my company over it a year and a half later almost. And, yeah, it's too bad that they don't. ADP, I guess, is, you know, these big payroll, third-party payroll companies, they don't accept it. They just don't deal with it.
Okay, so I want everyone on the call to come tomorrow night, today, this afternoon. Brother John had an extensive conversation with a representative from the State Department of the United States, and you're going to want to hear the update on that because it's directly related, of course, to this effort.
Tomorrow night's call.
Tomorrow night's call. Same phone, same pin, same time. Different speaker.
All right. Well, I'll definitely be there for that. And, yeah, it seems like the call's gone a little bit late tonight, and we have some other people waiting. The other thing I wanted to touch on was, the Corporation Soul and managing the funds. Is there an issue with putting funds in the Corporation Soul from your personal? I know that you talk about, you talk to your accountant about that. But,
For myself, I would never do it unless I had the accountant's letter that says, and I'm para-quoting something here, I have reviewed the tax liability that Brent has regarding Social Security number XYZ, and this $10,000 being moved has had the tax already paid.
Yeah, when you're not paying taxes, when you're not filling out a 1040 form, going to the accountant and giving all your paperwork on your personal, finances,
sure,
which doesn't exist, it becomes a little bit of a hurdle.
So the next step is that when you do it, if there's an objection 3 years, 5 years later or whatever, then you're hiring the team to step in and do the process.
Yeah. Are we any closer to going through that proactively?
Restate your question, please.
The, settling the situation with the IRS proactively before you start getting in trouble with them.
Well, that's in part what's being worked on now, and again, that question is going to be perfect for tomorrow night.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
All righty, sir. Thank you so much. Next is Bruce. Go ahead, Bruce.
Hey, good night. Someone was talking earlier about getting the DA to drop your case, knowing that your status has changed. I don't know if it's a loaded question or not, but okay, how do you do that?
Yeah, John is working on that actually for three other students right now, where first the law enforcement officers that initiated the contact that violated the substantive due process rights of one of the students, depriving them of their rights under color of law. They're being sued this, that paperwork is being introduced this week or next week.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember.
We'll have some live cases then real quick.
Yes, very soon. And then in addition to that, I imagine some sort of a conversation like this in the courtroom, Your Honor, as you can see from copies of these federal lawsuits applied against Officer X, Officer Y, and Officer Z for depriving them of my rights under color of law. At this moment, the only party that remains having standing at this moment is the prosecutor. And should the prosecutor not recognize that, in fact, my political citizenship status requires an injured party and doing 90 miles an hour in a 70-mile-an-hour zone injures no one, having a half a pound of cocaine in the trunk of my car injures no one, they have standing to be amended for that lawsuit, federal lawsuit, to be amended to include them in that federal lawsuit. Now, once that has been done, you, sir, sitting on the bench, as it relates to, hold on a second, let me pull it up. Oh, so I don't forget it. As it relates to Frankenhauser versus Rizzo, 59 FRD, 1973 decision, quote, it is the manner of enforcement, which gives Title 42, 1983, its unique importance for enforcement is placed in the hands of the people, each citizen acting as a private attorney general who takes on the mantle of the sovereign, guarding for all of us the individual liberties enunciated in the Constitution. When you look at that, Your Honor, and you can then compare it to just two other cases, where is it here? Schiller versus Rhodes, 416 U.S. 232, a 1974 decision, and I quote, U.S. Supreme Court held that certain officials acting by color of law may be held personally liable for the injuries or torts they cause, and that official or sovereign immunity may not be asserted, end quote. And you're also looking at Warnock versus Peso County, Texas, 116 F3rd 776, which is a 1997 decision that says, quote, when a state officer acts under state law in a manner violative of the federal constitution, he comes into conflict with the superior authority of that constitution, and he has, in that case, stripped of his official and representative character and is subject to his person to the consequences of this individual conduct. The state has no power to impart to him any immunity from responsibility to the supreme authority of the United States. So, Your Honor, if you don't stop this, it would have the appearance that you would also have standing in that federal lawsuit. Something like that. John would word it in a much more pleasant way. And that's what I need to learn. I need to learn to be more pleasant with people. I'm working on it. I'm 72 in a couple of months. I'll have it done by then, I'm sure. Rosemond versus Lambert, 469 F. Second, 416, quote, the burden shifts to the court to prove jurisdiction, end quote. It's in your lap, Your Honor. Okay?
Great.
Anything else, sir?
Nope. I'm taking notes fast and furious. That's awesome. Thank you.
All right. So that's what we have at the once we were calling us subject to a king.com. You can also find it at AmericanByBirth.com, along with the teaching that the greatest story never told that we've been doing for 3.5 months. All right, next is Jennifer Sue. Go ahead, Jennifer Sue.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things. The first is that gentleman, what I do, I would just make a receipt from myself to the corporation soul and or from the corporation soul to me saying thank you for the donation that you've given the corp soul, because anyone is allowed to give a donation to a 501c3 as long as it's not your wage. It's just you ask the accountant what percentage of my income am I allowed to donate to 501c3s, and some people have said it's 60%, but I don't know. But anyway, that to me is what I do.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay. I don't understand what people are using the W8 Ben exactly for, and what the OMB number is that other gentleman adds to his W8 Ben.
All right. Let's see if I can't get my hands on this real quick. GW folder.
Let me search this way. Ben. There we go. Master. Cancel. Try again. All right, I found it. Hold on. OMB. Got it. Here we go. OMB number 1545-1621. It's a substitute for OMB number 1545-1621. That's what it's in that top right corner where it talks about those things.
But what does OMB stand for?
Office of hold on.
And where did you... I'm not sure where you found it. So is every form or something has the same 1545-1621? I mean, you always just put that one number?
No, that's you just asked what the OMB number was. I get for that form. I gave it to you. It's a replacement for that form.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Of the W-8 Ben, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Office of Management and Budget. Okay.
And that's where the W-8 Ben comes from?
Yes. That's where all your forms come from.
Oh, okay. And how do we use the W-8 Ben? Like that guy said, it works for him. What does he do?
When you're having to, you know, fill out a W-8 or whatever, you fill out that form instead.
And have to fill out a what? And what's it replacing? The W-2, you mean?
I believe it's the W-2. I'm not clear. I'm really not clear on that. I don't want to misspeak. It's been so many decades since I worked for somebody. I don't remember.
Okay.
You know, probably Brent that was on the call earlier. If he wants to answer, if he knows the answer to that question, or anybody on the call that knows the answer to the question, press *2, and we'll see if we can't help. All right. So, Brent, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, when you go into a payroll department or you get hired at an employee. An employer, as an employee, they ask for your withholding information, and usually it's called a W-4 form they give you, and the W-8 BEN is a replacement for that. It's
Okay.
It's for non-U.S. citizens.
Oh, okay. Okay,
and
cool.
It's a form that allows you to be exempt from withholding.
I see. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Yeah. Brent, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else, Jennifer?
Well, I thought that other lady was live, but she's obviously already gone to the court and everything.
Yeah, a year ago.
I don't need to respond to that.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Uh-huh. Next is, and last is Charlie. Go ahead, Charlie.
Yes. Let's see. Three brief ones here. But first, thank you, Jennifer Sue, for asking that question. I also was, of course, thinking this is all live. But anyway, that explains the W-8BEN. Thank you for asking and explaining. Next, just a FYI, I think Saturday's call with Bernie was a replay, but I think it was a replay that was done the week before, just FYI.
So you're saying that, it was the same recording two weeks in a row?
I believe so.
All right. Well, thank you for letting me know. I'll have the programmer double-check that. We've just instituted this, and that could be a problem, so I'll check on that.
Let's see. There was a reference to CID, I believe. What is CID?
Criminal Investigating Division.
Okay.
CID is in the IRS. Those are the guys that, when they visit you, they have a gun on their hip.
Okay.
They also, they have a different identification card. I'm trying to squint my eyes here and remember. Your regular IRS officer is not able to do the things that they get away with that are only reserved for CID officers. And I just really can't talk to that more. That would be a great question to bring up tomorrow with Brother John. What is the difference between a regular IRS officer, their identification, and a CID officer and their identification? What is the difference in the identification? What gives them different powers? That would be the question.
Interesting. Okay. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right. I've looked for I've heard it several times, Systeme Trust.
Systeme Trust.
How do you spell that? I'm looking in the, what was it, the trust, I think it's chapter 3, the trust. I've heard that said, what is that? Spell it.
I'm doing a Google search right now to see, to give you what they've got to say on it. Wikipedia. All right, so it's C-E-S-T-U-I, one word.
T-U-I.
C-E-S-T-U-I space Q-U-E.
Okay.
It's Latin for the person for whose use or benefit the offerment was made. In modern terms, it corresponds to a beneficiary. And as it applies to the United States government, they supposedly operate for the benefit of this trust, which would be you with a Social Security number and being a federal citizen. You are the beneficiary of the SESTK trust. So, you know, that's an affirmation that I might find that I need to make. I wouldn't go down that calf path unless it was brought up. I just stand on the very simple premise. If I'm a federal citizen, hey, you own me. I'm literally your property. What may I do, Master? If I'm not a federal citizen, then what am I? And it's incumbent upon the court to establish evidence on the record. Okay? Anyways, take that spelling that I gave you and just run it down the pike, and you'll come up with all sorts of interesting things.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I referred to it, never seen it written, so thank you.
You're welcome. Anything else, sir?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right, real good. Next is Jennifer, followed by Kent. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Just a quick note. I was watching a video the other day, and they had a video of the military helping people in Hawaii, and on the uniforms of the military who were doing the helping was the emblem of a head. Can you guess whose head it was?
Trump?
Yeah. Trump's military, they all had little Trump heads sewn onto their uniforms.
I hope that's not an indication of something that happened 80 years ago.
Like what?
Sieg Heil.
Oh. Well, he probably has a separate military than Biden's, because Biden's is probably made up of illegals, and so that distinguishes the two.
All right. Thank you. Anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. We're going to end the call then with Brother Kent. Go ahead, Brother Kent.
Yeah, good evening, Mike. Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly clear, sir. It's been a while. How have you been?
Not too bad. And yourself?
Working hard, working into coal mines. Go ahead.
Is Greg going to be coming back on these calls? I thought he was going to come on the first Monday, if I understood correctly.
That was my mistake. I didn't contact him. It's not his. There's been no change on that. It was my error.
Okay. So I wanted to bring up two points, if I could. And if you care to comment, or maybe you'd rather give this over to Greg when he does appear. To bring this more up to date and more up to speed, he's talked a number of times throughout the last year, to my knowledge, of Anavon Wright's, David Strait, and a couple other people that were mentioned on tonight's call. Could we bring this forward a little bit with other people who have, shall I say, in quotes, gained some type of notoriety with this affidavit issue, and that are somewhat single-minded on filing the affidavit rather than working on other issues such as grand juries or petit juries, et cetera, such as Roger Sales and also Sedum. If you could bring us up to speed on them as to what may be improper about what they are doing, and then I will raise a second point.
I don't know that there's anything improper with what they're doing. It's just another path that they're taking. Salvation is the only thing I know where there is just one way. Everything else has multiple paths to get you to the top of the mountain. So I'm not going to have any negative comments. I have the highest respect for Sedum, however it's pronounced. And your buddy that you talk about, I don't know enough about what he's doing, but from what I heard, it sounds like he's, got a path that he's following that has, good results. So I've got no problem with any of that. I'm just saying that this is the path that we're focused on, and this is what we're doing. Now, post-RV, when money is abundant, funds are available to do lots of things. I'll like very much to possibly, have your buddy consider participating more with what we're doing so that we can present and utilize his efforts, along with our own efforts. Maybe there's some synergy there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to get in touch with the people at Sedum. It's always been everything's available here, but it's not really up for discussion. That's just what they show.
Right.
I don't know of any place where they're publicly speaking, I should say.
Okay, thank you. I don't want to take up a lot of time because it's getting late. The second point is Bernie has said multiple times that he at one time published a book or at least put out a writing.
Strategic withdrawal.
Right, strategic withdrawal, and yet he's reluctant to say much about that.
Yeah, I can tell you about it real quickly.
Okay,
go ahead. 15 plus years ago, whatever it was, sometime before my time, he was selling them, these books, the strategic withdrawal. People were withdrawing absolutely perfectly. They're out of the system. They're no longer in the system, for lack of a better expression. The strategic withdrawal had the effect of correcting your political citizenship status. However, it was being done another way. And the other way was through rescission of signatures in a proper sequence over a proper period of time to let things cure when you rescind your signature.
And the end result was that they have no signatures, no evidence in their record that, you know, created an adhesion type contract, if you would, mm-hmm. or a direct contract. The problem was he then had to witness these very same people who had not had proper financial planning to live out their life without getting a job in the system. So at that point, seeing the crushing effect of people having to go in, they could no longer use his process because once they had discovered the fraud and they were able to come out of, you know, that fraud by contract, you can't have a contract that's good if the four corners are not explained within that contract. So that was the success he had, and of course then they had to go back into it. Now when they went back into it, well, then they were accepting those contracts knowingly, willingly, and intentionally, and they were bound to them. Okay?
Okay, so I basically understood what you just said as being the case. The point mm-hmm. that I wanted to make, that there may be certain ones of us on the call that would like to at least have a more comprehensive overview of that may be prepared to do that and are further interested rather than just taking the position that, well, you know, we might get people in trouble, so therefore, you know, let's not talk about it at all.
Yeah.
So I'm just
there's nothing more to share with anyone other than what I've said, because okay. if what I've said is true and correct, and it is,
mm-hmm.
then and you're financially set to proceed totally outside the system, that's fine, and you're good to go. You now understand all of the backdrop to it, meaning you cannot go back in and ever escape again. If that's the case, then it's $10,000, and Bernie will process you through it.
Oh, so this is separate. What you're talking about with this amount, this is totally separate from all of the other work he does with PIFs, et cetera.
Yep.
Okay.
Totally separate.
I didn't understand. I never understood that he had something totally separate. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Next is Charlie and then Brother Daniel. Go ahead, Charlie.
Briefly, the call that was played tonight, assume I can request a recording from 2023. Is that correct?
No, I'm recording this tonight.
Okay.
So you'll get a copy of this recording tonight. So use today's date.
Okay. What was played before the Q&A was a recording, correct?
So tonight you have a recording plus what went live after I killed the recording.
I understand now. Thank you. I'll request tonight.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. My pleasure. Brother Daniel, speak.
Yes. Thank you, Mike. Hey, I believe that you said today was his birthday. I don't know.
Pardon?
I believe you
in 2 months, I'll have my birthday. I'll be 72, end of April.
Okay, being 75, I kind of know where you're at. But
yeah, so when you walk in the room, I have to stand up because you're older than me. I have to respect my elders.
Hey, and we all do that. My understanding that you said that it was his birthday today?
Whose?
Whoever we were speaking at the beginning of the call, you were saying his birthday. I was just going to say happy birthday to him. But
I don't remember. I was closing my eyes when the recording was playing until the end of it.
Oh, okay. I understand. Hey, thank you, Mike. Thank you, brother.
All righty, sir. Thank you. I want to thank everyone tonight for joining us. I want to invite you back tomorrow night. There's going to be some interesting conversation
We will bring up the conversation that Brother John had this afternoon with the State Department of the United States, and that's that. So same phone number, same pin, same time. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.